Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, heading into our next guest, Chase Tuning. So we met Chase actually because he is a fellow podcaster over at Ever Forward Radio. And we're really excited to share Chase's story with you because this was actually Jen and my first time hearing his whole story as well. And it truly is amazing. So Chase, of course, has his health and physical education and exercise science undergraduate and also a master's in health promotion. But really, Chase's story starts during his 6 year of active duty in the Army. Chase was, at the end of the 6 years, medically discharged due to a string of injuries that just really required him to do a lot of healing in his physical, mental, and emotional bodies. So really, the things that Chase shares are just gold in how to approach some of these things that can happen in your life that you may not be sure if you can make it through. So listen into the tools that he gives and hope you enjoy. All right, welcome back to the Optimal Body Podcast. Today, we have on a guest that Jen and I both recently met, Chase Tuning, who's an Army vet. He's big in the world of health and fitness and coaching. So Chase, thanks so much for being on with us today. Thanks for your service and thanks for being willing to share your story and just get it out there to the people.
My pleasure, guys. My honor. Thank you so much for having me. This is probably my quickest turnaround of new friends and new podcast guests, but I'm here for it.
Yeah. I mean, when I heard your story, I was pretty incredibly blown away at everything that you've gone through and experienced in your body. And then now where you are in terms of shifting in your mindset. And so I think this is really going to be so supportive for people. So thank you for just taking the time and being open to share your story. I think I love saying that because it's so important. And I really want to just dive in right there. Like, when did you get into the Army and how long were you in it?
Yeah, that's a great origin point for really everything that I'm doing today and who I am. It was a really transformational period of my life. I think anyone's life as a teenager, I actually enlisted my Christmas break of my senior year of high school. I was still 17. And I was following in some family footsteps. My father was in the Army. My uncle was a Marine. My grandfather. There hasn't been a generation of Tunings that has not served in, you know, one branch of the military, all the way back to, we can go back at least to the Civil War.
Wow.
And so that was very appealing to me. I was kind of waffling at that age, like I think a lot of people do, of what do I want to be when I grow up? What do I want to study in college? Do I want to go to college? Just a lot of, you know, teenage pressure norms. And so luckily I had a really great, great dad, and he just presented the opportunity of, hey, let's apply to colleges. Let's, you know, you look at any degree you want. We'll do college if that's what you want. But hey, can I share with you what the military did for me? And I experienced that growing up. You know, he was in the military as a young kid, or I was a young kid while he was in. And so I got to see a little bit, and it was a really cool thing to like go visit dad on the Army base and climb around in the tanks and get in the planes and the helicopters. And so I was kind of left with a great impression of that. And I just went in and actually spoke to the Air Force first, and they honestly couldn't seem to care less. They just were first world problems, you know, oh, we're maxed out. Everybody wants to join the Air Force. And then I was walking out and this Army recruiter just caught my attention, invited me and my dad to lunch. And then I got into what's called the delayed entry program at 17. I swore in, like I said, Christmas break back in, that was 2002. I left for boot camp 2003. I was 17 and enlisted right away for 6 years. Wow. I kind of already decided that, you know, the job that I signed up for was a pretty big commitment. It was in the military intelligence field. It was a lot of training involved. And so for that job, they asked of me a big commitment of time. And in return, they gave me a lot of college benefits, a sign-up bonus. And so it was very appealing to, 17-year-old Chase. And I was like, well, if it works out, great, cool. I'll love it. And then hell, I could retire in 20 years, 37, and go on to the next phase of my life. And if I don't really love it, I'll be 23, 24, and I can just move on to life after that. So it just seemed like the right thing to do at the time, you know?
So in that dive, you know, I'm a guy too, and I was 17 at one point. And thinking back on my 17-year-old self, like, quite different than I am today. And so going into that and getting into the Army, what are some of the initial things you started learning about, you know, whatever it is the Army teaches, scheduling, health, fitness, exercise, and how you started implementing that into your life as this young man?
Yeah, good question. I kind of went in with a little bit of a leg up, I'll say. I mean, like I said, my family was in the military, my dad was in it, and in this what's called the delayed entry program, you kind of begin to do what we call, you know, PT. You meet with your recruiter, you meet with a group of other guys and girls who are going in every week or every other week, and you run, you work out, you kind of go through some basic drills. So I was getting pretty prepared, pretty ahead of time from them and from my dad. But honestly, Dom, at the end of the day, it's just a quick crash course on how fast can you get your life ready in the day and show up on time in the right uniform and at the right place. Boot camp was definitely it. Looking back, it's going to be weird to hear me say it, like, it was fun. I would do it again just because of like the intense experience and what I learned about myself and how much more I could push my mind and my body beyond things that a 17-year-old, 18-year-old just would never think is possible. But yeah, it was a lot of just baptism by fire of how to follow orders, of how to work with a team, of how to think for yourself, but also keep the livelihood of the people to the left and right of you in mind, and to how to really the fundamentals of shoot, move, and communicate. That's what it came down to.
Yeah. I mean, how do you apply that into your life right now? And were there things that you've had to overcome just from that intense mentality? Like, are you still working through lowering some of that intensity, or are you super appreciative and you've learned how to adapt that into your current life?
I think that anybody who's gone through the military, and they'll probably agree with me in saying that it never leaves you. You may transition out from service member back to civilian, but there is just, because of the intense training, and really, I mean, you hit the nail on the head there, Jen. It's intensity. Yeah. Everything about it is intense. The job is intense. The training is intense. The things that are on the line, the payoff, you know, everything is so intense, and, you know, high risk, high reward all the time. And, you know, lives are on the line a lot of the times. National security is on the line. And so I spent, 6 years living in intensity in every way you could imagine. And so that doesn't really go away. I have a lot of the same kind of preparedness techniques, and definitely my mindset and just my kind of overall rigidness and discipline to, you know, the structure of my day in terms of when I wake up, of how I walk. That stuff just never really goes away. I'll look across the street so many times and be like, yep, that person's in the military. This person's in the military. Even just how we walk in cadence with other people, it just never goes away. It's like friendly brainwashing, I guess, that just, you know, it sets you for life, and it's in your character. It's in your identity.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I mean, I couldn't even imagine, you know, going from a gymnast, I feel like there's intensity, but Army and what you've been through, just a whole nother level. And so I guess it was, you know, for me personally, even just coming from gymnastics, I've had to work through things of like overcoming perfectionism and just getting things done and not worrying so much about the outcome if it looks perfect and that kind of intensity. And are there any things that have shifted within your life or relationships that you've had to really, you know, learn from that experience?
Yeah. Probably the biggest one for me was when I found myself working back in, you know, corporate America, you know, working mm-hmm. a 9-to-5, and then especially in leadership positions, you know, manager positions, because that mindset for me, you know, in the Army, I worked up to a rank that's called Staff Sergeant E6, which is a very, I would say, you know, like solid regional manager is how I equate it today. And in the military, of course, you always want to be mindful of your leadership techniques and your communication, but ultimately, at the end of the day, if you outrank anyone, they have to do what you say. And there's just protocol for certain things. And so that for me was a little bit of a transition of, all right, how do I show up now as a leader, as a manager, in various ways, professionally, personally, and kind of let go of that a little bit, because we don't walk around as civilians with our rank on our collar or on our sleeve or on our chest. And so you can't really look at people and just know they're lower than me or I'm above them or they're above me kind of thing. And so you have to quickly kind of get a better assessment really of how you choose to communicate with people and tell them to do things and ask them to do things and just overall communication and expectations for sure.
You know, I think that brings up a huge point, you know, specifically talking about the Army in this case, but just in any certain method. You know, the Army does it a certain way because it's the Army and it has a lot of reps at what they do and it works for them. But when we apply it to the entire world, just like if we go and learn a specific technique, Jen and I as PTs, you know, we have to know when we're in a real world situation with a human who's an individual or with a group of people, how does it apply there? And I think you're saying coming out of the military, it's like, okay, all these skills that I have, how do I learn how to more smoothly and optimally apply them to the real world? And I really like that point of view that you're given. I kind of want to dive back in before we jump too much into civilian life. When you were in the thick of it in your service, you went through some injuries and you went through some challenges. And you talked a little bit about the mindset that being in the military helped you, you know, foster. So can you talk a little bit about some of the injuries you had? I remember you even saying you had to relearn how to walk twice.
Yeah, at the end of it, that was kind of my life. I had a few things here and there. I think a lot of people, especially as you go through boot camp, just due to the intensity, you know, usually you haven't experienced something like that. You haven't lived 4 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day for months, just go, 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 go all the time. And so anyone would find themselves prone to injury or a few more aches and moans and groans here and there. But really at the heart of it, I suffered a lot of, I'll say, physical trauma, physical injuries, and a lot of emotional as well. During that first year, for about the first year, I struggled a lot with really questioning my purpose. Why am I here? And the reason for that was because I found out at that time that my father was, you know, only going to be with us for a few more months. He was diagnosed terminal with a really horrendous disease called Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. And he, like I said earlier, you know, he was a big reason of why I joined. He was my best friend. He was my hero. We had an incredible relationship. And so I was very, very much struggling emotionally with my emotional health, mental health of committing wholeheartedly to this life of a soldier, but also feeling like I was abandoning my family, you know, being thousands of miles away and not around them when they needed help and my father needed help. So that was a big emotional trauma, I dare even say, as far as, you know, spiritual trauma. Yeah. And then when he passed away about 15, 18 months later in 2005, that really sent me down a dark hole. And it was even more difficult to straddle that fence because mental health in the military, at least at that time, it wasn't really very open. I personally knew people that once you go down a certain hallway in the hospital on base, you're immediately stigmatized, and multiple people were prevented from opportunities to get promoted because of, oh, like, you're seeing a mental health therapist, or you have, you know, issues, you're crazy. And at this time, you know, keep in mind, this was the height of Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation Enduring Freedom. I was in from 2003 to 2009. And the mentality at a lot of these bases and a lot of these commands were, we don't have time for people that are mentally unwell. And it got me so far that I knew that it didn't seem like I could go get the help that I needed or wanted, or that was an opportunity or wasn't an option. And I wasn't maybe even brave enough to pursue that. And so I ultimately kind of just was giving up. I didn't care. I was so torn about this loss of my father. And I began to seek out opportunities to pull myself from my normal job to be deployed. I was volunteering and looking for assignments anywhere I could because I just flat out didn't care if I lived or died. And it seemed like if I was doing a different job or I was sent overseas and, you know, volunteering for more serious missions, that I had a greater probability of coming home in a box. And that was okay with me at the time. And so in preparation for one of, you know, these assignments, I was finding myself, you know, needing to get promoted and needing to go to these trainings and needing to do all of these things so that I could get picked up for the selection. During War Games one time is when my biggest injury happened. I was leading an ambush. I was leading ambush of, you know, my team at the time, about four or five other soldiers against what's called the Op 4, the opposing force, the fake enemy, right? And there was this convoy of tanks and trucks and foot soldiers coming through this kind of like desert lane. And honestly, what really happened is still very much a blur. All I know is I remember laying down in the prone position with all of my gear. We had been out there for days. I've been running on a couple hours sleep. I'm wearing all my body armor, my gear. And I just remember popping up, leading the assault. And then as fast as I was up, I was down. And just screaming in pain. And the next thing I knew, I was being medevaced out. What had happened was I tore my hamstring, my left hamstring. My L4, L5 vertebrae kind of went left. The rest of my spine, the rest of my body went to the right, and suffered significant trauma to like my whole midsection, my hips, my waist, my back. And then it just really became such a problem that I got yanked not only from that training, but from my job entirely, but also from the opportunity to deploy, and got put into a medical hold unit. And I went very quickly from being, you know, Staff Sergeant Tuning, Soldier Chase, to Patient Chase. And they wound up doing bilateral reconstructive surgery to both my hips. They went in one at a time, and I've got about foot and a half incisions from the top of my patella all the way to the side of my quad up to the top of my glute, where they just cut me open, surgically removed my femur, reshaped it entirely, cut down the femur head, put it back in, and then put multiple rods and pins up in my hip joint, my femur, to keep it there. And then it was days and days in the hospital. Then it was days and weeks of bed rest and being bedridden at home. And then it was progressed to, you know, a walker, a wheelchair, a cane, and then, you know, go to physical therapy. Shout out all my physical therapists. You know, you guys definitely helped me a lot during that time. And then once I could walk again and I could load bear, and this was about eight, nine months after that first surgery, they're like, okay, cool, Tuning, you're good. We're going to do the other side now. So it was just this wash, rinse, repeat thing of go to the hospital, get cut open, just be miserable for months, learn how to walk again, and then just, you know, do it again. And then after the second time, I was deemed non-deployable, which in the Army, you're really useless as a soldier. So I was then med boarded, went through a medical board evaluation, and my status at the time and my injuries and just my physical capabilities at the time were so severe that the Army actually medically retired me. It was beyond just a regular medical discharge, but like, hey, we broke you so much, we're actually retiring you. So silver lining is I didn't have to serve 20 years and retire. I did it in 6. So instead of retiring at 37, I retired at 24. And and then kind of just, they just sent me on my way. I threw my wheelchair on the roof of my SUV and signed out of base for the last time in 2009.
Wow. I mean, that is such a crazy journey. I feel like anyone listening is just a little bit cringy because you can't even imagine going through all of that work, all of that surgery. And on top of that, being pulled from something that you were working so hard toward. Now, I'm curious, because you had so much dissociation, what it sounds like, with your body, and it became, rather than focus on what I'm mentally going through, I'm just going to push through and I'm going to do and I'm going to keep doing until it makes everything else feel like it's going away. And my question is, do you think that dissociation with what you were emotionally feeling had an impact on ultimately what happened to your body and having the severity of injury that you did?
Absolutely. But I can only say that with certainty now, because of what I know and what I have gone through now, 10, 11 years after separating, of the work, right? Of physical work, of mental work, emotional work, and just really finally getting to know myself and instilling a sense of awareness and studying all the things, right? It's funny you say that, Jen. Actually, one time, my very first mentor, my very first official business coach, mentor, kind of situation that I, person that I hired, I was sharing with her my story. And before I actually got to the point of where exactly my injuries and the initial trauma happened, she pinpointed the exact location. Mm. And I was like, yeah, how did you know that? And she goes, well, it's very obvious to me that, you know, your root chakra and where the body stores trauma based on significant emotional trauma is typically in men, you know, right around this kind of like midsection, right at your waistline area. And then we dove into just all of that darkness and where I was with my father and all the stuff that I just shared here. It absolutely, I mean, the body keeps the score, right? And what I know now of trauma, and whether it's just an injury, you know, you twist your ankle and then you for the rest of your life are always kind of favoring that ankle, or you go through something very, very significant, an emotional trauma, sexual trauma, any form of trauma, you know, emotional, spiritual, in any age, really, it also leaves a mark. It also forces you to kind of favor your mind and your body for the rest of your days until you face it and work through it and sit with it. So I would say, yeah, now knowing what I know of the mind and the body, and it absolutely, I think, contributed to kind of the nature and the severity. And also I will give it up to, you know, a higher power, or give it up to something beyond myself, because the path I was on, it ended pretty soon for me. It ended. It was only just a matter of time before I didn't have to deal with that loss. But clearly somebody else had a different plan for me. And I tried to put myself in harm's way, and I physically had to be snapped out of it so that I could be put back on the path that I was meant for.
Yeah. And I appreciate you kind of being able now to reflect and say, you know, everything I've gone through, I'm starting to realize that we can't really separate those emotional and physical traumas. And I think
absolutely
we're starting,
not.
Yeah. And I think we're starting to realize, you know, whether it's people Jen and I work with or just in general in the world today, that for so long we've tried to separate that stuff. And you mentioned briefly about how mental health has been something that hasn't always been something our world's open to or our country's open to. And you kind of went through that journey of hiding all that. You had this event, you know, with this energy healer that kind of maybe opened up some of that understanding for you.
Mm-hmm.
And we chatted beforehand just about sharing and just about being able to be open and share. And now you told us, like, no, I got nothing that I want to hide from. I've made a decision about 3 or 4 years ago to start sharing myself, you know, unadulterated. And what would you tell to other people out there that are listening that have a similar story, that have some trauma in their life that they want to be able to open up about? Or, you know, how do people start to get to that point where they're just like, you know, I'm just going to share it all?
Oh my gosh. Powerful question, and just a powerful thought for anybody to have. And I would say, if anyone is questioning that, or that thought, that question has popped in your mind, it's for a reason. And I would encourage you to not run from it. I would encourage you to build a practice that allows you to sit with it, because that's exactly what I didn't do for a long time. Hmm. I thought that this pain, I thought what I went through was something that I needed to just like suppress and ignore, and like, oh, I went through it, it's done, it's over, I can't do anything about it. And to a certain degree, I will still make that argument. The past is the past, right? We need to be moving forward. But that doesn't mean we can't learn from the past. In fact, we should be. And my personal example was the very thing that I was running from, the very thing that I was ignoring, the dark passenger I had in my life, shout out to all my Dexter fans, you get that reference, was the very thing that I wound up circling back to and making space to sit with and to learn from and to ultimately bring with me every day of my life. That loss of my father and everything that I thought that I lost, yeah, of course, I would wish that he was still with us today. I would love to be sharing this life as a grown man now with him, but you know, that wasn't in the cards. And so regardless of what I went through, what you went through, or even this just kind of sensation, this feeling, this gut thing that maybe you don't even know what it is, the body keeps score, right? You know, the physical trauma, emotional trauma, spiritual trauma, like anything that you have gone through, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, our natural tendency is to ignore it. But I found immense power in just first starting to be with it and then personally exploring it. Because I think initially it's very difficult, like I was saying, in the military to reach out and find help, whether you think there's a stigma, whether you're going to be scrutinized or whatever. I would encourage you to start with yourself and how I did that before I eventually went back to professional help. Therapy was I just got just a cheap notebook and I just brain dumped. I didn't know what I was going to write about. I have any clue. But once I started putting pen to paper and just my conscious, subconscious, my head, my heart started dumping out all of these things, it gave me the next steps. And it showed me really what I was afraid of. And it showed me what I needed to work on. And then, like I said, ultimately, it gave me purpose.
Yeah. And that's amazing, sharing a little bit of your own story there. And the one thing I would want to say is thanks for bringing a little attention to that and just the whole thing about mental health. And I think we're coming a long way. I went through my own experience with pretty severe anxiety, and it's something that we want to run from initially, but we get to keep on tearing that stigma down.
Yeah. And do you notice now that if you are finding yourself running away from something, you're not diving in, Do you feel that? Is there a connection to your body? Do you feel pains? Do you feel these old injuries start to creep up? Like, is there a noticeable connection now that you can find?
I would say so. Yeah. It's like when, you know, you learn a new yoga flow, or you really nail your technique or your form in the gym on a movement. Like, you know what right feels right. You know what good feels like. And then when something is off, it's much more noticeable. And that's not to say that that wasn't there before, but you had just have decided to show up, to put in the reps, to learn and to be present with this practice of yoga, of journaling, of deadlifting, of whatever it is, insert any practice here. And over time, you find your norm. You feel it physically, mentally, emotionally, in all ways. And then when any form of that is off, you know. And I think a lot of us do know, but we just choose to ignore it. It's, you know, like when you're in the gym and you think like, you know, I think my squat form is like not quite ideal, but you know what, I'm good anyway. Next thing you know, you drop down in the hole and you injure yourself, and you could have just paid attention to what your body was telling you for a reason. And the same thing goes for, you know, all these other traumas and stuff. And so now, yeah, when there is something that just kind of, it's just a gut feeling, and it's just this little thing that just causes you to go, let me pause here. And I think just that pause, that there's a great military term for you, you know, tactical pause. It's something that we're trained to have throughout our training, throughout our career, is just to learn how, when, and why to have a little tactical pause. Because sometimes in your life, on your mission, in your practice, if you just insert a breath, a moment, a minute, an hour, a day, whatever it needs to be, to just pause and have that slight division between you and the thing, you can figure out what you need to do next in a more appropriate way.
That's powerful. I mean, that's something Dom and I talk about a lot, is like coming back to your breath. That's the connection point. That's where you're really fine. Like, oh, yes, it's actually this stressor. It's actually this emotional thing that's going on, rather than just my body. And I hope that people on this podcast are like hearing the same thing over and over again. Yeah. So that it continues to get rooted in the true cause and the connection of this mind body.
And I'll even say that, you know, years later now, you know, I finding fitness and movement not only continued my rehabilitation, but it gave me new purpose, and I've fallen in love with it. And it's been my entire career and reason for living now for the last decade. I'll kind of make the excuse of that's why I think I never got into like competitive, you know, bodybuilding, powerlifting, because for me, absolutely. I mean, I'm very, very happy and very impressed with like the strength that I have now in life. Well, before Corona, you know, in the last 6 months, what's a deadlift? There are no gyms open here. But, you know, me getting to the point of deadlifting over 400 pounds, of squatting almost 400 pounds. I think last time I maxed out was like 385. That's I'm super happy and super proud with that, given what I've gone through. But to your point, Jen, yeah, when I reach those really kind of heavy maxes, the body is like, hey, remember what happened here? Let's not push it. And then that's really a big mental barrier for me is, you know, even though I know I have done X amount of weight or X amount of training before, when I get close to that threshold, the body reminds me. And then I get in my head of like, I have this horrible catastrophe vision of like my hips blowing up again or my pins popping out. And who knows if that's actually physically possible or not, but just goes to show you how quickly, you know, the mind and the body can interject to your own ego and to your own ability or what you think you're able to do.
And I think kind of what you talked about a minute ago about learning to ignore those signals that the body gives us, you know, I think along with us just ignoring the signals the body gives us, we're almost taught to do that throughout our lives as kids. The things the body talks to us with, oh, just ignore that, you know, oh, my stomach hurts, oh, just ignore that. When in reality, we could, from the time we're really young, start teasing out the things our body responds well to, resonates well with, and all of that. So I think that just starting to have that mindset and awareness that the signals our body sends us are for a purpose.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And taking those in, integrating them somehow.
I say all the time that the body whispers all the time to us. The body is whispering what needs attention for days, weeks, months, sometimes years, until eventually it reaches its breaking point and it's done waiting on you to address it, and it starts screaming. Mm-hmm. And it screams in the form of massive inflammation, acute injury. It screams in the form of tearing a hamstring or having a mental breakdown or panic attack. Too often we go through and we ignore and we shun and we hush the whispers that our mind and our body are giving us until eventually it starts screaming, and then they're undeniable.
Oh yeah. That, I mean, that happens so much. And I think even it's interesting to hear how your fears of the same traumas happening to your body again still pop up. And that's very real. And I think that's also part of the journey too, knowing that it's not like there's this destination that you all of a sudden get to and it's like, oh, I have no fear of injuring myself anymore and it's all good.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a process, and it's a journey, and becoming more aware along the journey is ultimately what's going to help you to continue to move forward. And you being able to lift the weights that you're doing now, wow.
That's amazing.
Chase, it's really, really incredible and so inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you. It took me a lot of years. It's funny, speaking of screams, the body screams, when I was first kind of, I guess, getting a little cocky and, you know, rebuilding some strength and able to get back in the gym, you know, it was about year two or so after the military, and I was in school, and my brother and I would train a lot together, and he kind of quickly became obsessed with powerlifting and freakishly enough became very, very good at it. He's like, how are you this strong? Makes no sense. you know, me just kind of wanting to have the bro time, and just, I would always just kind of train whatever my friends and my brother were training, just because I enjoy the, you know, the community aspect of it. Man, that kid had to help me like limp out of the gym quite a few times, because I would just be like, oh shit, here it is. You know, take me back to the hospital. My hip popped out. From a very early age, you know, I would push a little, my body would push back. But, you know, I think now we're in a pretty good harmony. And I'm very content. I'm very happy. And that's another big lesson I've had to learn over the years, is there comes a point when you should really stop trying to prove something to yourself or to somebody else. And for me, my training and my rehab and just growth in life in general, you know, a lot of it was trying to prove something of, you know, hey, the army, like, I committed so much of my life to you and I had this identity wrapped up in it. And then you literally told me at the end, you are not worthy. You literally told me you are not capable of being a soldier anymore. And we have no use for you, and we kicked you out. And so I would use that as fuel, as motivation, and sometimes to a fault, to where I would push myself beyond my means. I would push myself to goals or to do things or train in a certain way or do something in business or life that it wasn't for me. And I think that was a very humbling experience of really learning how and when and why to do something, to set a goal, and, you know, when to push the envelope, when it was for me and when it was, you know, when it was not. Because every time it was not for me, it didn't work out. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. And I think you're diving now into what we wanted to be the next part of the interview, but we're going to have you back for a part two, where you transition this whole journey of your own, and then you find your fitness And then you start doing it for others through coaching and through putting out what you do on your podcast now. And so we're definitely going to have you back for number two. But where, until then, can people dig into more stuff about you online?
Oh, yeah, would love to. Thank you guys for having me for round one. Yeah, a lot of this stuff is what I talk about now. You know, I've gone through the journey. We'll get into this later of, you know, being a trainer and a coach for many years and being in the health and wellness industry. And then I've kind of channeled it all into what I do now full time. And that's my podcast, Ever Forward Radio. It's all things health, wellness. I kind of promote these three pillars of what I believe it takes to live a life ever forward through heightened attention and awareness to our fitness, nutrition, and mindset. And so, yeah, it's, you know, it's me talking, it's guests like yourselves, both you guys, you know, fitness, nutrition, mindset, military, entrepreneurship, just anything that I think helps us give us that 1% edge, optimize any area of our life, improve our relationships to, like I said, live a life ever forward. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, so much. And honestly, Chase, you're the living, walking example of what's possible coming out from...
Grateful to be walking example, that's for sure.
But yeah, coming from what you've had both mentally and physically, and being able to connect the two and thrive, it's really incredible. It's really inspiring, and we're both very grateful that you're willing to share your story and continue to push that message forward.
Thank you. And if I could close and say one last remark, kind of circling back to Don, what you're saying, you know, how can we present this to other people to begin the work themselves? As many times now, you know, it's, you know, kind of my career, you know, getting on the microphone, whether it's my show or being honored guest on other people's shows like yourself, telling my story every time, it's a little bit different because you all are asking different questions. I'm in a different mindset. I'm in a different mood. And so I get to go back down. I get to go back down that rabbit hole of my life, of my experiences, both positive, negative, and anywhere in between. And as much as I love doing this now for a living and content creation and all that stuff, it literally is a form of my continued work and my continued therapy. It just opens up, I won't say old wounds. It allows me to kind of face, and you know, as much as I'm all about moving forward, it allows me to do an about face, to turn around and face that path that I have blazed thus far, as reminders, as gratitude, as continual learning lessons, as, hey, maybe I just said something or thought of something that I have suppressed or completely forgot about. So, as much as this was, you know, sounds like a great conversation for you guys, it was continued work for me. So thank you.
Absolutely. And I think that's an amazing message to send out for people to start sharing that first iteration of their story and starting to face it and get a little more comfortable with it. So again, thanks so much, man. And we'll have you on again soon.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.